Learn live in the classroom at Online Trading Academy's Financial Education Center in Bellevue. You'll have access to state-of-the-art workstations where you can learn on a professional trading platform. Text Cairo to 57682 to register for a free half-day workshop and learn more.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studios, I'm a bit incredulous at what I just heard in Ursula's newscast. Let's get to the breaking news just coming in.
The Big Lead. Breaking news.
So what was the Seattle City Attorney, Smokin' Pete Holmes, he is now challenging because a judge said the first come, first serve law that our radical city council wanted, that it was too radical, even for Seattle. And Pete Holmes said, no, it's not, that we're going to try to go to the Supreme Court and reinstate that and tell landlords who they can and can't rent to, essentially, right?
Yes, so he has filed a notice of appeal today, and instead of going to, so it, this law was already ruled unconstitutional by a King County Superior Court judge.
Right.
So the next thing would be to go again to the appeals court, but he is going straight to the state Supreme Court.
Yeah, of course. State Supreme Court's been, as I talked about last segment, been bought off. Of course, you want to get right to them as quick as possible. What was the line in the newscast about all renters being equal? What was it?
So the supporters of this law say it would make sure that renters were treated equally. They would it would also reduce discrimination. So if anyone has any biases, they wouldn't be, you know, if someone is a person of color.
No. That has nothing to do with it because people of color are already protected as a protected class. This is different from that.
I'm just saying this is the
that's what they're saying.
Argument.
Yeah,
yes. I mean,
well, they're absolutely wrong about that. Does anybody in their right mind think that all renters are created equal? Is there anybody alive who believes that all renters are created equal?
And that's the argument used by landlords and other people who are criticizing this law, saying, you know, you're taking all ability of any landlord to make some kind of judgment on, hey, this is not someone I want to rent my property. For whatever reason.
And I talked to a landlord about this, and what he told me is that when he schedules an interview with a prospective tenant, he has somebody who works for him, and they go out and they look inside the car of that prospective tenant during the interview. And if it's filled with garbage and trash, he knows that that's what they're going to do to his apartment. And he said, no way will I rent to somebody if their car is completely trash. And now, according to Pete Holmes and the Seattle City Council, that bit of subjectivity would not be allowed, that they would have to define in writing their criteria for who they're going to rent to, and then the first person that comes along that meets that criteria, they have to rent to them by law.
Yeah, the first qualified applicant, yes.
That's the question that I have for Pete Holmes, Seattle City Council. Do you believe that all renters are created equal? And again, you are already in a protected class based on your ethnicity, your skin color, your religion. Those are all protected classes. Your sexuality is a protected class here in our state. But beyond that, beyond the, you know, and we have a broad number of protected classes, all people are not equal. And I know that's the fantasy, the delusion of the Seattle City Council, that all people are equal. But that absolutely is not the case. There is great, as we talked about last hour, some people are good-looking and some people are me. We're not all equal. Now, life would be so easy if I was good-looking.
But would you want to not have a place to rent because someone might not think you look as good as the next person physically?
I'm fine because we don't have looks is a protected class. And if I was a landlord, I wouldn't want somebody looking like me living in my building, crying out loud. I wouldn't want.
Especially if you have a messy car.
No, if I was a landlord, my apartment would look like Melrose Place. Just be all beautiful people. But it's just, we're not all created equal. And it's the other story you had. And I know this is I know how much trouble I'm going to get in with my comments on this Tacoma thing.
Oh, no.
These tiki apartments, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so heart goes out to people who are feeling like they're in desperate situation. They are in a relatively cheap apartment building. I saw a woman in a wheelchair who's blind mm-hmm. and deaf.
Mm-hmm.
They are kicking out everybody because they sold the building. A developer is going to come in. They haven't done any upgrades to the building, apparently, in forever. And so a developer bought it, is going to kick out everyone, do a major remodel, and no doubt jack the rents way up.
Right.
They're kicking out everybody. By law, you get 20 days notice. Now, there's a reason that's the law. And it only applies if you are in a month-to-month contract or lease. If you have a lease agreement where you make payments 3 months in advance, then that's the notice they have to give you. But if you're on a month-to-month lease, then it's a two-way street. You can leave anytime you want, and the landlord can kick you out anytime you want. That's just the reality. The reason you, on a month-to-month, can't give people 3 months to get out is because they stop paying their rent. And it's way too costly to go to court and try to recover it. And then you end up just eating 3 months' rent because, and there are lots of studies and stats that have shown that too many renters just don't pay right before they leave a building. So that's why the law is, and now the Tacoma City Council, because of all these tearjerker stories, they, as you just said in your newscast, they're saying, well, we might demand that they be given 3 months.
But less than three weeks? I mean, I know, and I understand, I totally understand what you just said, and I get it. But less than 3 weeks, and I don't, there needs to be a better safety net. I mean, these people are going to end up on the streets, and then the city's going to end up paying even more.
Should it be a two-way safety net for the landlord, too? And,
yes.
And tenants can't leave with 20
yes.
days? Really? You think a tenant should have to stay and pay rent in a building? Let's say that they, you know, they get a new job in Boise, and they say, hey, I got to leave in 3 weeks. I'll give you 20 days notice. And you think the landlord should be able to say to the tenant, oh, no, you still have to give me 3 months' rent?
Oh, you're saying, yeah, well, I don't know. But I think it could be at least you're going to pay through the end of your whatever your contract is.
And that's what it is now. It's a month-to-month contract, and that's why the landlord. But let me get to the point that I know people, the haters, are going to wildly misinterpret. There are some people there who are disabled mentally and physically. My heart goes out to them. There are some people who are there, and I've watched a lot of these public testimonies before the Tacoma City Council, and they are probably in a tough situation because of a lifetime of choices that they have made. And we are all, not all, 95% of us are the sum total of the decisions we make. And government doesn't care about you. Landlords don't care about you. Corporations don't care about you. The only person who truly passionately cares about you is you and your family, your friends. Corporations don't, landlords don't, and government sure as heck doesn't. And if you go to the Tacoma City Council and you say, oh, I don't have the money to get out in 20 days. I can't find it. Why is that government's responsibility? Well, if you're 50 years old, and a lot of these people were, and like I said, maybe they're victims of bad choices they've made. That's why you can't just make decision after decision after decision that leaves you destitute and in a bad situation, and then all of a sudden one day say, hey, government, make up for my lifetime. Make up for all the choices that I've made the last 50 years. And that's why you have to have control of your life. You must have sovereignty. You have to make decisions so you can hopefully work a second job, put a few bucks in the bank so you're not paycheck to paycheck. Do whatever it takes. Outwork your competition. And when I see people going to government and saying, you fix what my life is, it's unrealistic because government doesn't care about you. And that's, I get so frustrated. And I know people are hating what I'm saying right now. I know people can't stand the message of self-sufficiency around here in the Puget Sound area. But that's what was going through my mind. Yes, we should always provide a safety net for people with physical and mental disabilities. And we should have a place for them. And we should, as taxpayers, we should help them out. But I don't think we should help out people who could have helped themselves through a lifetime of better decision-making or a lifetime of working a little harder. And that's what the problem I have when I hear this. Let's go to the government and government will fix everything for us. And I'll give you another example right here and now of how government says they're going to fix a problem, but what they're doing is they're making the problem much, much worse. Let's talk to a local dad here up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, big local.
When I go to my local grocery store that's closest to my house, it's in Albertsons, and one of the courtesy clerks there has become a really good friend of mine. He's a big Seahawks fan, and he's also on the spectrum, and he does a fantastic job at the grocery store, and just one of the friendliest guys I'll ever know. And I have great admiration for companies like the grocery stores that hire people who are, you know, developmentally disabled and on the spectrum. It seems like a win-win. But something is happening in our state right now that may make a lot of those jobs disappear. And I want to welcome to the show a dad. His name is Buzz Humphrey. He joins us here on Cairo Radio. Hey, Buzz, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Thanks for the invitation, Dory.
And your son, Matthew, has Down syndrome, I understand, correct?
Correct. 43 years old.
Okay.
He's worked at Northwest Center for 22 years in various sheltered workshop environments.
Okay. And what kind of work does he do there?
Well, it's been varied. It's assembly and packaging of Christmas packages. It's currently he's wrapping and cleaning TV remotes that have been returned and are going to be reused, that sort of thing.
Okay, got it. And do you know how much money he makes there?
He is currently working 2 hours a day. His hours have been cut back because his funding, federal and state funding, is going to end in March of next year. So he's going to be totally out of his current job.
Okay.
He is working, as I say, 2 hours a day for four days a week. So about 8 hours a week.
Yep.
Throughout the month, and he averages $8 a month.
$8.
So you can figure that out on it's a pennies per hour.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Which is legally allowed because our city, our state, they have carved out what they call a sub-minimum wage exception for people who have developmental disabilities that employers don't have to pay them the city or state mandated minimum wage, right?
Right.
Okay. And that's going to change now. There's been a big push to say, no, your son Matthew and everyone else in his situation, they need to get the same minimum wage as everybody else. What's your perspective on that, Buzz?
I think it's unrealistic, it's short-sighted, it's not taking into account unintended consequences of what's going to happen to Matt and a lot of other severely handicapped, disabled workers who are not going to be offered any form of employment by an employer. And my concern with this ordinance is not only is he not going to be offered any paid employment, but I'm concerned that an employer might feel that per this ordinance, a disabled worker can't even be hired as a volunteer.
Well, the challenge, of course, is once you get into the real economic world that, you know, you and I have to live in, the reality is we have to produce more revenue for our employer than what they pay us. And if we do not, then we don't have a job. And it's tough for somebody in Matt's situation to deliver that much value, revenue, in return for, say, a $15 an hour wage. And so, yeah, I'm with you, Buzz. I'm afraid that the consequences of this are going to be devastating for, you know, people like your son.
Yeah, oh, I agree. It's interesting if you look, and I haven't actually read, but I think I'm getting enough calls on this subject that I'm going to study the ordinance itself. But quoting part of the wording in that ordinance, it applies to individual, quote, whose earning capacity is it doesn't say may, but is impaired by age or physical or mental deficiency or injury. So implicit in this ordinance is that the disabled, mentally disabled worker or physically disabled worker, for whatever reason, does have a restricted capacity, but yet having conceded that there are certain categories of worker that do have impaired earning capacity, they're to be paid full minimum wage at the very least, and it just, it's contradictory, and it makes no sense.
Well, it doesn't, and, you know, I worked below minimum wage when I was 12 years old. There was a grocery store in my neighborhood. My mom had no money, and minimum wage at the time was $2.50 an hour, and the owner of the store said, I'll hire you, but I'm only going to give you $2 an hour below minimum wage.
Right.
I just wanted a gig, you know, so I was thrilled, and I didn't care that I wasn't making minimum wage. But, you know, for people like Matt, for the people like my friend at my local grocery store now, you know, they have something to do that makes them feel productive. They, you know, maybe they can't produce $15 an hour worth of return on investment right. for the employer, but they still get up with a purpose. And I don't know. This whole thing is just crazy to me. The more I hear about what the city and state are going to do here, Buzz.
I agree with you 100%. And interestingly, not only, as I mentioned, does this ordinance implicitly acknowledge that certain prospective employees, including the developmentally disabled, do have an impaired earning capacity, but how to protect them and ensure continued employment is to continue the sort of special certificates that have been on the books for years and are still as a part of state law. And those special certificates are given to the employer, or they could be issued to the employee with a certification by a healthcare specialist or doctor that this person is, in fact, has reduced earning capacity and should be considered for employment on some other basis, like the time motion study.
Well, but I mean, look, if they have to pay your son $15 an hour, he now is competing with everybody else, you know, most of whom don't have Down syndrome, because the employers are not going to pay $30,000 a year for somebody who is not able to return value. And our politicians have to know that. So what's the motivation here? Why do you think they're doing this?
To put it bluntly, political correctness. It doesn't matter the reality of the situation, but this is a very liberal city, and I happen to be very liberal and generous in my economic and political philosophies, but this is fantasy. It's just it's political correctness is essentially the bottom line in my mind.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Well, Buzz, I have some dear friends who have kids on the spectrum, and I think the patience and love in families like yours is awe-inspiring, and I hope that our politicians don't make things so difficult for kids like yours to be able to work that all of them are going to end up out of jobs, because this is just madness right now.
Well, I agree, and thank you for taking a stand and cutting through all the opposing views and really focusing in on the core of the issue.
Yeah, well, I appreciate your thoughts as well. Buzz, thanks for coming on with me this afternoon.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me.
Buzz Humphrey, his adult son, has Down syndrome, and our local politicians are going to put guys like that out of work. It's unbelievable, and it also is the big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Ursula's going to check the news, and then our favorite sound bites of the day coming up next. Hey, thanks for listening to the Dory Monson Show podcast, brought to you by Industrious Office. If you are on the search for your business's next home, there's simply no hotter place in the country than downtown Seattle right now. I went on a tour with Emily at Industrious Office. It's an amazing workspace right on 6th and Lenora in the heart of all that Seattle has to offer. Visit industriousoffice.com/Cairo or call Emily to schedule a tour. Mention Cairo, receive your first month lease for free.
Hey there, business owners. Isn't this great? You can listen to Dory anytime, anywhere. If you're listening, your customers probably are too, so you need to give me a call. I can help you out and get your business placed right here in this show. 206-726-6819. It's Tina Sorensen, the General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio.
Woo! I made comments right before the news about the situation in Tacoma, where tenants are being given the 20-day notice to get out because a new buyer has taken over the building. And I've been getting a text storm from a government employee. Francis describes his or herself as a port worker, if that's true, if that's Francis's name. You are so full of crap, a 20-day notice? Well, that is what law requires, and there are reasons the law was crafted that way. $900 to hit the street, you evil slime. It's a new buyer. They aren't required to give them anything. So $900 is much more. And then he calls me evil slime, and then more text. Slimes, millions here, and you support the greedy? Nope, not even close to what I said, Francis. And your listening skills, maybe you don't have to have listening skills in your port worker job. I don't know what you do for the port. What I said is corporations don't care about you. Government doesn't care about you. Very few people care about you other than you and your family and your loved ones and your friends, your closest friends. But corporations don't care about you and government does not care about you. And anybody who thinks that they can rely on the benevolence of corporations or government to get by in life is sadly deluded. What a pompous ass you are. Instead of trying to drum up bucks for these folks, you criticize their way of life, you slime. Why is it up to me to drum up dollars for other people? Why is that up to me? When I think, and then more came. Dory the slime supports the eviction of tenants who contributed to the prosperity and success of their landlord for years. Well, you obviously don't know the story. The landlord they've been paying for years sold the building. The new landlord has zero connection with these tenants. The new landlord bought the building with the intention. And then Francis, the port worker, also hopes that bad fortune befalls my crew here on the radio show. So I'm sorry that you and Ursula and Nicole and Sean, I'm sorry you guys got dragged into this. But Francis wants some bad things to happen to you guys because I believe people should be more self-sufficient and not rely on government or corporations for their getting by. So I apologize. If anything bad happens, it's Francis, not me, who's calling for that. Okay, the Bill Cosby trial. We're going to play this anyway in awesome audio. Bill Cosby is going to go to prison for how weird is this fall? He had maybe the most successful sitcom besides Seinfeld in television history, and he's going to go away for the rest of his life now. Mm-hmm. Most likely, he's 80 years old. Could get
30 years
up to 30 years in prison. And we played this quite a while ago, but this is one of his comedy stand-up routines. From, do you have a year on this? Is 60s or 70s?
It was like 76 or something around that.
Okay.
Yeah, 70s.
So this is Bill Cosby, and he joked back in the 70s. He made material out of drugging women. And so, yeah, the fact that this is coming back to haunt him now, but this to him is, and to, I guess, America, is what passed for humor 40 years ago.
When I was 13, man, start talking about weird things. You know anything about Spanish fly? What? Spanish fly. You know what? You know anything about Spanish fly? No, tell me about it. Well, there's this girl, Crazy Mary. She put some in her drink, man. She... Yeah, Spanish... Oh, yeah, that's really groovy, man. Spanish fly is groovy, yeah, boy. From then on, man, anytime you see a girl... Well, she has a Spanish fly, boy. Go to a party, see five girls standing alone. Boy, if I had a whole jug of Spanish fly, I'd light that corner up over there. So I thought it only existed in Philadelphia, you know, and I'm working on I Spy, and Bob and I are working together. Sheldon Leonard comes up, says, boys, I Spy is going to Spain. I said to Bob, you know, because he don't know nothing about it. I said, hey, Bob, you know what I'm going to pick up when I'm in Spain? He said, Spanish fly.
So that was part of his routine.
That sounds so bizarre.
Sounds like a confession now.
But it's also weird listening to the audience reaction. There are women who are laughing about, you know, getting drugged with this. You know, and I remember when I was in high school hearing about Spanish Fly. It supposedly made people randy, as the Brits say. But, yeah, that was part of his comedy. And now maybe his life. And that's why he's likely going to spend the rest of his life in prison. What a fall that story is. Much more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. All right, before I get to today's sign, the end is near, I have a very sweet story that I still haven't gotten to today. And it's the story of a 92-year-old World War II Navy veteran named Paul Sonnier. And according to family members, he was in the Navy during the Pearl Harbor attacks. He served during World War II. And he just wanted one more thing in life. He wanted to be with some pretty ladies. So some sorority girls at Southern Miss said, let's make this guy's dream come true.
Today is a special day for 92-year-old World War II veteran Paul Sonnier.
He's great. He deserves this. We're happy to do it.
Jessica Morrow, a social work intern at Southern Care Hospice Services, says she often visits with Sonia.
He says, I'll teach you how to do the jitterbug and the waltz. And he proposed to me. So.
But.
So he's telling the girl who volunteers at hospice care, I wish I could dance, teach you to jitterbug and waltz. And then they thought, well, let's make this guy's dreams come true.
One day, he told her that he wishes to have one final dance with a beautiful woman.
Oh,
he's a flirt.
He is
a flirt. But in the sweet way.
Morrow gathered her 5 Mu sorority sisters, and the ladies decided to throw him a patriotic dance he'll never forget.
You feel good to be with all these beautiful women.
That's Paul there. To be with all these beautiful women. He looked like he was in the height of his glory. I bet he wished that he could turn back the clock from 92 years old when all those girls were in his room.
Being that Sonnier is currently bedridden, family members says it warms their heart to see him being himself once again.
We're super grateful because he hasn't been out of the house in so long, and all these pretty women get to come around and visit him. He gets to hand out flowers.
What we appreciate the most is that our greatest generation member right here, my father, is happy that this younger generation appreciates everything he did and sacrificed for so that they could sit here and have fun and have the freedoms that they have.
While Sonia couldn't physically dance.
I'd like to dance, but I can't. I got a broken foot.
So it's a very sweet story, and too often the only time you hear about the Greek system in the news is when somebody has done something lousy. But here's a bunch of sorority girls who decided to make a dream come true for a 92-year-old World War II vet, and good for them. With that as mere prelude, it's time for today's edition of
Today's Sign That the End is Near.
Make this today's sign double shine. Oh, man, this story's horrible. A couple of girls down in Georgia climbed in the car that one of them drove, which was just a little tiny, what are those things called? Those little tiny, tiny cars, not the smart cars, Mini Cooper. One of the girls drives a Mini Cooper. It was senior skip day at their high school. And so they decided to do just that, but one of the girls was driving, or the driver, was going 106 miles an hour. 106, lost control of the vehicle. The car flipped. Her friend was killed. And I saw the pictures of this car, and there's no way somebody could have survived it. The girl who was driving 106 miles an hour, she's on trial for vehicular homicide, and it's unbelievable what her lawyer asked for. He wanted the judge to say, please don't take away her passport because she and her family have planned to go on a cruise.
She doesn't need to be on a cruise enjoying herself.
That was the district attorney. She doesn't need to be on a cruise.
If you look at her history, these parents have covered for her over and over and over again. And I believe in my heart of hearts, Miss Penn would be alive if they had had this child have some consequences.
Yeah, this girl had had all kinds of disciplinary issues in years past. And when parents don't deal with that sternly and strongly, kids will keep pushing boundaries. Until you get to the point where you're driving 106 miles an hour and somebody dies. Here's the attorney for the girl who asked that the judge let her keep the passport so she could still go on the family cruise.
We were not trying to be insensitive. We were just trying to say, Judge, she's already had these tickets for this cruise.
Can you imagine that in front of the dead girl's parents who were in the courtroom? Oh, yeah, can my client still go on a fun cruise coming up? The judge said.
The judge gave Baker a $31,000 bond and did ask her to surrender her passport so no cruise. She also ordered her not to drive and stay off Snapchat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they were on Snapchat, too, when they crashed. All great decisions there. What a sad outcome that is. All right, and finally in today's sign... A bar in Manhattan, New York City, they refused service to a customer, a guy named Greg Piatek. He went into the bar and he was wearing a Trump Make America Great hat. And the owner of the bar says, I don't like Trump. You do? I'm not going to serve you. Get out. The staff, according to the lawsuit, the staff at the bar said, anyone who supports Trump or believes in what you believe is not welcome here, and you need to leave right now because we won't serve you. So then the guy had a decision to make.
You can leave your hat on. You can leave your hat on.
Leave the hat on and get kicked out? Or take the hat off and have a chance of being served? Well, a judge has just ruled on this guy's lawsuit. And the judge says, yeah, you're not in a protected class. Who you like politically does not put you in a protected class. The bar is free to deny service to Trump supporters. So the guy lost his lawsuit, the bar prevailed, and he's going to have to find someplace else to drink as long as he wants to wear his Make America Great hat. Because the bar owners and employees, they were a little bit triggered by that hat. I have no problem with this. Private business should have great latitude in choosing who they can and can't serve. I do have a problem when a baker or a florist says, I don't want to do any kind of wedding ceremony that people like Bob Ferguson will try to sue them into oblivion. I think a business should be free to say, in most cases... that they can deny service. And Trump supporters are not in a protected class. But I also think that bakers and florists should be able to deny service on a wider basis. And I'm not talking about race. I'm not talking about skin color. That's a protection that's been in place for more than 50 years in America. I'm crying out loud. Want to go into a bar? A bunch of liberals own? Or take it off and get served. I gotta get out of here. I've said everything that I have to say for today. But I will think up a bunch of new stuff when we get together for our Friday extravaganza. Ron and Don coming up next. I'll see you back here tomorrow. High noon. Adam.
My job is to make sure this program is morally upright and cultural and wholesome.
You got your work cut out for you, Bird.
Now that was unwholesome. That was not cultural.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.